We continue our look at the presidential election, and with his thoughts and perspectives, we've got Warren Kinsella on the line. Liberal propagandist, mudslinger, professional purveyor of paranoia are some of the phrases used to describe him, while Lawrence Martin once described him as the Lee Atwater of Canadian politics. The Ottawa Citizen called him our version of James Carville. A lawyer, politician, a political consultant, and political pundit, Mr. Kinsella was special assistant to former Prime Minister Jean Chrétien. In 1997, he ran unsuccessfully for the Federal Liberals in North Vancouver. He's also the author of four books, most recently Kicking Ass in Canadian Politics. His acclaimed blog can be found at www.warrenkinsella.com. It's my pleasure to have Canadian Politics' Prince of Darkness with me as he sheds some light on the political affairs south of us as well as in this fair country. From Toronto, welcome to the commentary.ca, Warren Kinsella. Good afternoon, Mr. Kinsella.
Good afternoon.
How, on your blog you say that Bush will win tonight, is that...
Well, I hope I'm wrong, but, you know, I think I'm right. If you look at the way the Electoral College, this bizarre system of electing presidents in the United States, if you look at the Electoral College, it makes clear that, you know, Bush has got an edge. And he's got an edge principally because he his committed vote has always been quite committed, very committed. And Kerry has got just a larger, softer vote. So I hope I'm wrong. I've often been wrong, but I think maybe Mr. Bush will eke out a victory tonight.
Does it matter for Canadians who, I mean, obviously who wouldn't?
If you were involved in the softwood lumber industry, and plenty of people in BC and Alberta and Quebec and Ontario are, Atlantic provinces too, if you're involved in selling cattle, if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about peace in the world, if you're concerned about any of those things, then you should be preoccupied with what is taking place in the United States of America today, because the decisions that are made, or in some cases not made, in the U.S. government have a direct impact on Canadians and the way we live our lives. So I would say it is very important.
After the presidential debate, you said that whoever looks the most comfortable usually wins, and the person who looks like a phony will get sought out by the public, and they'll figure that out. And you said in your gut that you thought Bush had won the debate. What has Kerry failed to do in this campaign so that he could win tonight? So that he could have won tonight, excuse me.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, TV, unlike the medium that you and I are talking on right now, TV is a very visual medium. It is the most visual medium of all. It's emotional. It's not informational. So that's why I always tell people when we're preparing candidates for debates or when they're trying to assess who's winning and who's losing, when you're watching a political issue playing itself out on TV, just turn the sound off. And whoever's winning the visual war is usually the one who's winning the war itself. And I would say that, you know, on the visuals, and again, this is something, a position I came to with great reluctance, because I wish it wasn't so. You know, Mr. Bush just looks more comfortable. You know, he looks like somebody who you'd be more likely, as per the cliche, to have a beer with, as opposed to Mr. Kerry. You know, Kerry has that kind of stately, austere, more reserved demeanor, and that certainly plays well with some people, but probably not as well as that populist kind of shtick that George Bush has got down pat. So, you know, I think that's why a lot of Canadians were looking at the debates, as we all did, and saying, absolutely, Kerry won, and then we'd all be as surprised and astonished the next morning when it was showing that far from Americans believing Kerry won, that many of them thought that Bush had won. So it's frustrating, but it is true. You know, the visuals matter, and that's why Bush, like Reagan before him, conducts his presidency as kind of a visual exercise.
I was reading your book last night, rereading it, and I suppose you could say that if Bush wins tonight, that Bush kicked ass. What, I guess Kerry did not? He was not tough enough.
Kerry was 30 points behind in New Hampshire. ago during the primary, so, you know, I don't think any of the members of his team, and I know a few of them, should by any means feel, you know, like they let him down or they let their party down if they were to lose tonight, because, you know, they've come a long way. And it's tough to run against an incumbent president, and it's tough to run against an incumbent who's got an economy that's doing not badly, more or less. And it's tough to run against a president who is a war president, you know, because Americans, however much they dislike this war in Iraq, have a tendency to pull together in the times of, you know, so-called external threat. So there's all kinds of factors there that were militating against Kerry or whoever the Democratic challenger was. But he's done pretty well despite that. And, you know, I've been wrong before. He may pull it off tonight.
As an observer, do you think that there's much of a difference between Kerry and Bush?
Yeah, one of them favors the use of unilateral power to invade countries. I mean, this is the irony. Maureen Dowd was talking about this the other day. It's supremely ironic that George W. Bush's father fought Saddam Hussein because Hussein unilaterally invaded a country, you know, more than a decade ago. And here we turn around and his son is unilaterally invading a country illegally and alienating the world. And that was a tough thing to do because, you know, after September 11th, there really wasn't a moderate or reasonable person on the planet who did not sympathize with the United States and did not sympathize with what had taken place to them. And to take all that goodwill, as George Bush did, and toss it out the window with this ill-advised adventure in Iraq, while Osama bin Laden was still running around in the hinterland, that tells you, you know, how far this guy has gone to alienate world opinion.
If this is a referendum on Iraq, as I suspect it is for some people, why do you think then the race is so close?
Because Americans have a culture that favors the use, the creation and buildup of an armed forces. And, you know, it is different in the United States than it is in Europe or in Canada, certainly. This is not, the use of the military power is not anathema to many Americans. And there is no question, you know, in fairness to Bush, Saddam Hussein was a monster. You know, he abused human rights. He murdered thousands of his own people and untold numbers of others in other countries. But, you know, at the end of the day, Jean Chrétien and others were saying, look, you know, George, it's worthwhile for you to spend a few extra days to try and marshal world opinion and get the support of the United Nations, as your father did, as your father did. And Bush was impatient and arrogant and decided to plunge ahead, and now we have world opinion more anti-American than it's ever been in many decades.
It's fascinating to think about what in Maureen Dowd's book, Bush World, how she calls it an Oedipal loop de loop, how he just ignored his father's advice and plowed on with what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
Were you advising John Kerry, would you have advised him to do something different so that he could have resonated better with the public?
I would have been much more critical of Mr. Bush. You know, the Democrats have a tendency to pull their punches during the writ period, and you know, you've certainly seen that. So when the Swift Boat veterans came out with their smear of John Kerry, Kerry, for example, did not take that seriously. He did not respond quickly enough and say what should have been said, which is these people are stooges, bought and paid for by George W. Bush, and George W. Bush lacks the guts to admit to it. But he didn't do that. He let them spread their poison. And as recently as yesterday, John Kerry was still hearing about it on call-on shows. You know, is that true? Is that true that, you know, you weren't really a war hero? So, you know, however much people don't like that kind of critical advertising during election campaigns, it does work, and it particularly works if you do not respond to it in a factual and efficient way. And Kerry did not do that. So I would have advised him to be much tougher with Bush. You know, I mean, Bush was a draft dodger. He's a draft dodger. And I think I would have said that, maybe not have Kerry say it, but say, you know, this guy dodged the draft and the other guy's a war hero. Who do you want?
To taking this to a Canadian perspective for just a sec, the three majority governments that you helped win for the Liberals became a minority in June. Was that because Paul Martin wasn't negative enough, or was he? Is there a relation there, or a correlation there between what we're seeing now in the United States?
Well, it's a two-part exercise. You know, anybody seeking higher political office should have their record, and by that I don't mean their personal life, but their record, you know, their votes and their quotes and the things that they've done in their public life, that should be exposed to public scrutiny and subject to criticism if they deserve criticism. But at the same time, you've got to give people hope, and one thing that I learned in Chrétien's knee is he always ends speeches the same way, you know, Vive le Canada. He always had that note of hopefulness and positivism. And I think it revealed itself particularly in his final term, you know, with saying no to the war in Iraq, by saying yes to equal marriage, by liberalizing marijuana laws, by doing all the things he did, you know, fixing up campaign finance laws. They were all positive things and, you know, spoke to kind of a higher interest. And so, yes, you're entitled to criticize your opponent during an election campaign period, but you should also be talking about, you know, your ideas and the positive stuff, and Chrétien always did that. As to what Mr. Martin and his people did, I have no understanding of how they ran things. They're in the Globe and Mail this morning saying that they called the election knowing that they were going to lose the majority, which is the stupidest damn thing I've ever heard of. So you got to ask them, you know, what their thinking is, if any.
I've got a couple of questions left about the election tonight. Do you think there'll be surprises for us tonight? Will we be up late?
Well, I mean, it all comes down, unfortunately, to Florida and Ohio. Ohio's got 20 electoral college votes. Right now they're saying it's in the Bush category. I've seen other polls saying it's in Kerry. If Bush pulls off Florida, which right now is in the Kerry category, it's all over. You know, so there's all kinds of, you know, permutations and variations here. Bush can offset Kerry in Florida if Bush carries Wisconsin and Ohio. I don't know if that's possible, but I mean, Florida looks to be, as of last night, strengthening up in John Kerry's category, and so hopefully that holds for guys like me who would like to see him become president of the United States.
We're talking with the political strategist Warren Kinsella. www.warrenkinsella.com is where you can find his blog. Joel Achenbach, he wrote in the Style section of the Washington Post recently about this new malady that he's come up with called pre-election anxiety disorder. Is that something that you think a lot of people who observe American politics, that they're going through at this moment?
I think that's funny. I wasn't familiar with that phrase. Yes, I experienced it this morning. I have to say, and I was down in a food court just about an hour ago picking up a slice of pizza. You can smell it in the air today. You know, none of us can vote. We're all Canadians. We're just observers. But we are, as I said at the outset, we're participants, too. We have a stake in the outcome. And I would say that that is true. There is a lot of nervousness. You can smell it today. People, you know, the Internet, everybody's checking the Internet continually to see what the latest vote story is and so on. So it's the stakes are pretty high, even for Canadians.
It's kind of exciting, isn't it? It's sort of like the Super Bowl every 4 years.
Yeah, it is. It truly is. And, you know, it has serious and profound implications for all of us.
Let's bridge into Canadian affairs. You mentioned Jean Chrétien for a sec here earlier. I've always been interested in, and I've tried to figure this out from the books that I've read, the couple of Paul Martin biographies and the Susan Delacourt book, as well as through your writing on your blog, that working relationship between former Prime Minister Chrétien and then Finance Minister Paul Martin has been touted by both sides as one of the most productive working relationships in Canadian history. Now, I'm asking you this question because you were close to some of the players, and perhaps you were there at the time. Why did that relationship deteriorate so?
Well, you know, in politics, it is natural and normal and okay for people to have ambition and to want to advance and to seek even higher office. So Mr. Martin, there was no question he always wanted to do that. But, you know, certainly in the Liberal Party of Canada, you do that within certain parameters, and you do that within certain reasonable limits. And basically, he allowed his ego and he allowed his desire to achieve the leadership of the Liberal Party of Canada to even get in the way of governance of the country. And it did not reflect well on him, and it certainly didn't help the country either. So it that's why I count myself as one of the people who is not a supporter of his leadership, because I think he placed his personal interest ahead of that of the party and the country.
Do you think that in the next, however long this minority government lasts, that there are people in the wings waiting to take over should he depart? Should he leave, retire from politics? Or
there always are. I mean, in every party, there's always somebody there who thinks they can do a better job, and that's fine. You know, John Manley's an impressive guy, Martin Cochon, Maurizio Bevilacqua. I personally like to see a woman, a serious female candidate, step forward, because I think the Liberal Party and the country could benefit from that. But I have to say, the viciousness with which Mr. Martin and his team applied themselves to seeking the leadership had the effect of driving out a lot of promising people. So the Liberal Party doesn't have a lot of talent on the front bench at the moment, and you know, perhaps that serves Mr. Martin's interests, but it doesn't serve the party's interests.
Now, having fought hard for the Liberals in previous campaigns, was it painful for you this past election to vote for the Conservatives?
No. To which?
To vote for the Conservatives.
Well, I didn't.
I thought you did.
No. I like Stephen Harper. I've known him for a number of years, but no. No, it was painful to see what a crummy, disorganized, ridiculous election campaign they ran, but I was preoccupied with a family member. My dad was dying, so that was my biggest preoccupation. I didn't really give a damn what they were doing.
Right.
And, you know, I got in some trouble at the start of the year by predicting that these guys would lose the parliamentary majority and get a minority, and that was roundly, you know, derided at the time, but I guess it wasn't that far off the mark. So, no, I was quite happy to not be part of that. I think it was one of the worst election efforts I've ever seen.
What's your reaction been to the reaction had to Sheila Copps's book and that which she writes about Prime Minister Martin?
Well, I felt badly for her, on the her allegation with respect to the Canada Health Act. That was just not something I recall taking place, and I've talked to her about that. But with respect to what she said about Mr. Martin in Iraq, it was true. You know, in April of 2003, on numerous occasions, Mr. Martin said that we should be in Iraq. He supported the war in Iraq. He supported George W. Bush's war. So she was right on that. If I'd been advising her, I would have advised her to focus on that, where there was clear and tangible evidence of Mr. Martin's position, and not focus on something that was very difficult to prove.
Sorry, I lost my train of thought there for a sec. I'm going to ask you about your predictions for tonight. They say that both sides wish that this is, we're bridging out of the American election, that should, whatever the result be tonight, that it be decisive, whether it be for Kerry or for Bush. What's decisive? Is that 3, 4, 5 points? Or will that be as close as 2000?
It looks like it. If you look at all the Electoral College projections, it's going to be tight. You know, less than 10 Electoral College votes, which almost certainly means the engagement of these, you know, armies of lawyers. And that's one army that nobody wants to see. I say that as a lawyer. Nobody wants to have this settled in the courts, but it very much looks like that will be the case.
And I was talking to a professor of political science yesterday from Rollins College in Florida, and he was saying that social unrest could be a possibility. Is that something that you see a possibility as well?
I don't know. Last time the uncertainty played itself over 90 days, there was certainly some volatility in Florida. But, you know, it didn't really manifest itself into widespread social unrest. But I guess at that point, nobody really knew what potential harm that George W. Bush could, wreak on the United States. Now we all know that. So, sure, anything's possible. I just hope that's not true.
I want to ask you about the blog. How long have you been doing the blog?
I had a website for some years. I actually can't remember how long I've had it. And then I just started putting up commentary. I only found out subsequently about this blog stuff. And so I guess, you know, people tell me that's what it is, so I guess that's what it is. And so the blog thing has been a couple of years.
pioneer in this sense. I mean, you're one of the more prominent blogs, I guess, in the country. Do you enjoy doing that? Do you enjoy having a place, a forum to dish, to gossip, to talk about politics?
Yeah, it's fun. I've always been a writer. I've been writing on a regular basis since I was 11 years old. So, and I've always been a big mouth. So, yeah, it's fun in that regard. I have to say that the demographic of the Internet still troubles me. It does seem to be awfully white and male and angry. And I'd like to see more female voices there and more moderate liberal voices. So, you know, if I'm having any impact at all, I hope it is there in persuading kind of lefty liberal types like me to get more involved in the Internet. Because there's just too much nasty, hateful stuff out there in the web, and that has to change.
Warren, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
My pleasure.
And your blog, I mean, it's a must-read for me because of the insight, the expertise, as well as the gossip. So I recommend it for everybody who's listening to us. And thanks again, Warren.
Thank you.
Warren Kinsella here on thecommentary.ca. I'm Joseph Plena.